The growing awareness of the relationship between diet and health has led, I think, to an increased demand for food products that support health above and beyond providing just the basic nutrition. And we're going to be talking a little bit about an aspect of that, a couple of aspects, probiotics and prebiotics, and how it those things relate to our digestion, our digestive tract, and to our overall health. And a couple of guests for you today. With me in the studio, Dr. Frank Greer, pediatrician, professor in the School of Medicine and Public Health at UW-Madison. And he is on the American Academy of Pediatrics Committee on Nutrition. And that committee is developing a position statement for pediatricians regarding probiotics and prebiotics. And Dr. Greer, welcome. Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you for finding me, Larry.
Also with me by phone today, Dr. Kelly Karpa from Hershey, Pennsylvania, is a registered pharmacist and assistant professor in the Department of Pharmacology and an instructor with the Graduate School of Nursing at Penn State University College of Medicine. And she is the author of the book Bacteria for Breakfast, Probiotics for Good Health, and it describes the clinical utility of probiotics as therapeutic agents. And Dr. Kelly Karpa, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Larry. It's a pleasure.
Pleased to have you with us. I'm sure that, and maybe we start, Dr. Greer, with you, people are wondering, well, what are probiotics? What are prebiotics? Give us a little background on this.
Well, probiotics are basically bacteria in our intestinal tracts, which are thought to be generally beneficial to your health. The human microbiome, which includes all the viruses and bacteria, fungi, probably algae, I don't know, in the intestinal tract that we have, we probably have 500 different species of these bacteria or viruses in our intestinal tract. Only about 7 of these can we culture. And of those, probiotics are a relatively small amount of these bacteria, but these are the bacteria that have health benefit. And prebiotics are basically, let me just say that probiotics, the term is being expanded somewhat now, and it's not just limited to living bacteria. It's also thought to be some special molecules made by these bacteria, which can actually be transmitted from mother to baby through mother's milk. The prebiotics are generally nutrients in the diet which are thought to help promote the growth of probiotics. Human milk, for instance, is full of prebiotics and promotes the growth of the probiotics in the intestinal tract of, say, a breastfed baby.
Okay. Well, thank you for that description. And Dr. Karpa, you came to probiotics in a very personal way. Can you tell us about your son and how you and what happened there?
Sure. My son was 2 years old back in 2001. And he was an otherwise healthy, normally developing toddler. And suddenly that summer, he developed really severe diarrhea. And a lot of people think, well, diarrhea, how bad can that be? Well, it can get pretty severe. And he was passing stools upwards of 20 times a day. And for any person that, is going to the bathroom that often, you run the risk of dehydration, electrolyte disturbances. Certainly in a child, you run the risk of malnutrition and even growth delays. So we were obviously quite concerned. And it took about 10 days before he was diagnosed with a condition called Clostridium difficile-associated diarrhea. Clostridium difficile is one of the normal bacteria that may live in our digestive tract. And typically, it doesn't cause a problem. But for some people, it overgrows. And it can overgrow particularly if there aren't enough other healthy bacteria to suppress its growth and to keep it and its activities in check. And so my son was given this diagnosis, and standard of care in medicine says that there are two antibiotics that are generally used to treat this condition. One is called, an antibiotic called metronidazole, another is called vancomycin. Both of them have a lot of potential for causing harm. Nonetheless, these are the only two options that we generally turn to. He ultimately spent the next 9 months of his life on these antibiotics, only to have the situation, the diarrhea condition, reoccur as soon as we would stop the antibiotics. So essentially, we could not take him off of the antibiotics without him being significantly symptomatic. And ultimately, we took him down to Johns Hopkins, where they decided it was in his best interest to stop the antibiotics, and they prescribed 6 grams per day of healthy bacteria, or a probiotic, for him. And ultimately, within about a week to 10 days, his symptoms resolved, and, you know, we lived happily ever after for all practical purposes. So that was my introduction to how powerful probiotics had the potential to be.
And that probably resulted in the book then.
It sure did, because I wanted to tell others about the data that was out there in the literature, both animal studies, you know, as well as some of the human studies that had found benefits using these healthy organisms to treat and cure diseases.
And so tell us a little bit more about your book.
Okay. The book really answers a lot of the questions that I had when my son was sick. You know, where do we get the bacteria that live in our intestines? Where do they come from? What do they do for us? Why do we have them in the first place? How do those bacteria get disrupted? And how in the world do we fix that disruption once it occurs? And then each chapter also goes into different conditions, different disease states, where there's at least a little bit of evidence suggesting that probiotics may be beneficial. And there's certainly some diseases or medical conditions that have more evidence for potential benefits of probiotics than others. But I wanted researchers, clinicians, and patients alike to sort of get a feel for the literature and what was out there. So it's the book really reviews the literature on a layman's level.
Hmm. Our guests today, Dr. Frank Greer and Dr. Kelly Karpa, as we talk probiotics, prebiotics with them today. If you'd like to join in, I haven't given the number yet, so let me do that right now. If you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Anywhere else, it's toll-free at 1-800, you can also email us at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. So give us a call with your questions and with your comments. Let's go back to Dr. Greer for a minute here. You've had a lot of opportunities to work study this or look at this situation, and the American Academy of Pediatrics Committee on Nutrition is coming out with some position statements on this. What are your views?
Well, I think it sounds like Kelly and I are really on the same page. We have reviewed all of the literature on the subject like she has, and it sounds like the probiotics are most advantageous in situations that involve her son, and that's basically a pretty severe form of infectious diarrhea, I would say, with C. difficile. And if they have a benefit for children, it's mostly in the treatment of diarrhea, where the best evidence exists. And, of course, when you get placed on antibiotics like her son did, probiotics are extremely sensitive to antibiotics, and the probiotics that are naturally present in our intestinal tracts are killed off almost immediately by the bacteria. And I'm sure sounds like the gastroenterologist at Johns Hopkins University correctly diagnosed her son and correctly treated her son. I assume he's still on the probiotics to this day?
My son is still on probiotics. We don't keep him on the same high dose of, you know, he doesn't get 6 grams of bacteria every day, but he absolutely does still get some probiotics each and every day.
Now, what form where do we find probiotics? Let's put it that way. Where do we find it in foods?
Naturally?
Yeah.
I think primarily you find it in the fermented foods. So probably 100 years ago and before that, when our ancestors would make fermented milk products, the yogurts, when they would make fermented vegetables such as sauerkraut or fermented beet juice, there were healthy lactic acid producing species of bacteria that were part of that process. So I suspect that from a historical standpoint, we probably, our ancestors probably got a lot more of these organisms in their everyday diet than we typically do these days, living a fast-paced, you know, in a fast-paced Western culture.
Yeah. We have every one of our phone lines is filled, so I think we should probably take some calls. But I want to, before we do that, in Sunday's newspapers, there was an ad for Yo Plus yogurt. And is that, and I think it's a probiotic, considered a probiotic, and the plus is added probiotics to the yogurt. Is this any different from a low-fat yogurt?
Do you want me to tackle that one?
Sure, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dr. Karpa.
I looked that up earlier this morning because that's not a yogurt brand that I'm familiar with. And what I had seen was that in addition to the standard, if you want to call them standard probiotics or standard organisms that are used to make yogurt, there is also a strain of bacteria called BB12, a strain of bifidobacteria called BB12 that's added to the yogurt sort of after the yogurt making process. And I am not a food bacteriologist by any stretch of the imagination, but from what I understand from my friends who are, there the two strains that are often used to make yogurt, Lactobacillus bulgaricus and Strep thermophilus, those strains are absolutely necessary for the fermentation process to actually make the yogurt. However, most of those different strains and species probably are not very stable in the stomach acid environment, or perhaps even more appropriately, the bile acid. So those organisms, while necessary to make yogurt, they may not truly fall under the World Health Organization's definition of probiotic in that they may not produce any real health benefits for us if they're not going to survive the digestive tract. However, the BB12 strain that is specifically added, and I suspect that's what the plus part of that yogurt stands for,
yeah,
that does definitely have the potential for health benefits, both from a diarrhea standpoint and even some limited evidence coming out of some of the Scandinavian countries for allergy prevention, or at least eczema type of atopic dermatitis prevention.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. I want to give Michael and Toma a chance to chime in here. Michael, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much. Quick question real quick. Interesting topic, very interesting. My question is the pre or probiotics, I know they use possibly to treat diarrhea, how is it an effect of getting someone's bowels regular, and then also too with skin disease like eczema, psoriasis, does any of that have any effect? I'll take my answer off the air, and thank you for a great program.
All right, thank you very much for calling. Dr. Greer, I'll maybe start with you on this.
The question was, how do probiotics...
Oh, the question was... One part of the question was in treating, does it have any effect on...
Oh, making you regular.
Making you regular. The other was eczema.
I don't have a lot of information how it's used on constipation, but there are plenty of people who take some of these products to make themselves regular.
Yeah.
And it seems to be effective by those people who take it.
Yeah.
As far as effects on skin diseases and, prevention... Allergic skin diseases, maybe he's talking about. I think it's far
eczema.
Less
eczema. Yeah.
It would be far. The evidence for that is
less,
and it's it's being added to infant formulas in this country and in Europe, particularly to have some impact on infantile eczema. And I think the data is not nearly as good as for treating diarrhea.
Dr. Karpa, comments.
With regards to the regularity aspect, I think some of the bacteria produce a substance called butyric acid. Butyric acid helps with peristalsis, and that's a big fancy word that basically means the contractions that occur in our digestive tract to keep things moving. So that may be the mechanism, the production of this butyric acid or other short-chain fatty acids that actually help to stimulate peristalsis and keep us regular. I think there's really just two groups of investigators, both from the Scandinavian countries, that have shown some evidence that if a mom takes a probiotic during the last part of pregnancy, and then if the babies are supplemented with the probiotic for the first 6 to 12 months of age, there may be a decrease in allergic skin diseases in those infants that were supplemented. And there's also some evidence that even using probiotics in young children that have eczema may, particularly if the eczema is caused by an IgE-mediated food allergy, that the probiotics can be beneficial. I've personally helped to treat patients that, this one gentleman in particular was a young college student who, out of nowhere, suddenly after a prolonged course of antibiotics, suddenly he started breaking out in hives every time he ate. And food allergy studies showed that he was suddenly allergic to very common things, cayenne pepper, for example, you know, as well as some other common spices. And he was able to get rid of those incredible food allergy symptoms by using a probiotic. So I have seen benefits, and I agree the data is significantly less strong, but I think it's certainly warranted if patients want to give it a try. It's one of those things that probably won't hurt you, and hey, it just might help.
It just might help. Dr. Frank Greer, Dr. Kelly Karpa, our guest today as we talk probiotics and prebiotics and the digestive tract. Dr. Karpa has authored the book Bacteria for Breakfast, Probiotics for Good Health, and it is published by Trafford and is available, I believe, through Amazon, for example. Dr. Greer is on the American Academy of Pediatrics Committee on Nutrition, and it's developing a position statement for pediatricians regarding probiotics and prebiotics. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening as we discuss probiotics and prebiotics with our two guests, Dr. Frank Greer and Dr. Kelly Karpa. Christina in Glenwood is up next. Christina, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hi there. I take 50 to 100 milligrams of doxycycline every day, and therefore I eat kefir and yogurt that I purchase from the Natural Food Co-op every day. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, should I take a week off from that antibiotic? And then also, can you give me examples of prebiotics and other probiotics that could be beneficial?
All right. Well, we'll turn to Dr. Karpa first here. Dr. Karpa?
Well, I wouldn't advise you to necessarily stop taking the doxycycline. I'm not sure what it is that you're taking it for. It's used for many different things, ranging from acne to, you know, serious infection. So I'm definitely not going to advise you to stop taking that without a discussion with your physician. When it comes to actually eating yogurt or eating kefir, sort of a rule of thumb is that when most yogurts are manufactured, they have about 2 billion, that's billion with a B, 2 billion bacteria in them per cup. And that's at the time of manufacture, and then the numbers steadily decline over time because the moisture in the product is probably the biggest killer, if you will, of those organisms, the moisture and the oxygen content. So when you asked about, I guess, prebiotics and probiotics, there are a number of probiotic supplements that can be taken that orally by mouth. Usually they're available in capsule form or powder form. And you can get upwards of, you know, 20 billion to, you know, hundreds of billions per dose depending upon how many capsules, you know, you take. With regards to prebiotics, these are, as Dr. Greer stated, are basically starches that we can't digest. Our bodies can't digest them, but the good bacteria can. And so it's like feeding the good bacteria. A lot of times in health food stores, prebiotics will be marketed under names such as inulin or FOS, which stands for fructooligosaccharides. There are some foods that are very high in prebiotics as well. Honey, for example, 1% of honey is you know, fructooligosaccharides. Jerusalem artichokes, and to be honest, I don't know how they differ from other artichokes, but they are often quoted as being a good source of prebiotic as well.
Hmm. Thanks, Christina, for calling Hemant in Milwaukee. Your turn now. Hi.
Hey, thanks a lot for this marvelous program. You guys are doing a great public service. I read a study in the Newsweek or what that probiotics shorten the course of a common cold in some group of people. I was just wondering, I've seen that in the health food stores, a lot of these are really expensive supplements. Is there any best probiotic or prebiotics to take that are not too expensive on a regular basis to kind of just boost one's health or just to prevent colds and things like that?
I don't know if it's been proven to prevent colds. I don't know. Dr. Greer, what about it?
As far as I know, it's not been proven to prevent colds or even ameliorate cold symptoms. I think Kelly can answer, she's a pharmacist, what they're relatively low-cost probiotics on the market. They don't have to be expensive. Most of them, I think most of the common ones are relatively inexpensive. Is that right, Kelly?
Well, are we allowed to mention names of
particular products? Yeah, go
ahead. We are? Okay. Yes, that's absolutely correct, that they don't have to be expensive, but it's also correct that some of them are extremely expensive. The product that I generally recommend the most actually is a homegrown Wisconsin product. It's called Florigen, and there are several different lines of Florigen probiotics. But the one that I typically suggest for most digestive tract type of, you know, just want to take a probiotic to, you know, remain healthy, is Florigen 3, which is a mixture of three different strains of bacteria. One is a lactobacillus, and then there are two bifidobacterial organisms in that product as well. And each capsule has a relatively high cell count of viable live organisms, and the strains in it have been widely studied, and including the strain. One of the strains in that Florigen 3 product is the same strain that you mentioned in that Yo Plus yogurt, that BB12 strain of Bifidobacterium.
Okay, and you've done some work with that company, have you not?
I do. I do work with them. I do some consulting from time to time and do some speaking for them as well.
And Dr. Greer, comment?
I just want to comment on the use of probiotics in general for your health. Generally, your microbiome or the bacteria present in your intestinal tract are pretty much established by the time you're 2 or 3 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what you do, you typically revert back to whatever your state was when you're 2 or 3 years of age. So if you start taking any of these probiotics, I think it's important for the public to know that you have to continually take them. If you stop taking them, the probiotics generally will disappear from your intestinal tract that you've been supplementing with. I'm pretty sure that's what the research shows. Now, you have to continuously take these probiotics
to keep that level up.
To keep that level up, to keep that benefit going, if it's a benefit.
Okay, Bonnie in Deer Park, it's your turn. Hi, Bonnie.
I'm calling because I have a lot of food allergies. So then I'm just wondering how would I know which of these probiotics I would need to take and where I would find it? Is the answer to get your book, or do I go to the library?
All right, that's a fair question. Dr. Karpa?
I think the easy answer is we don't know. I think that this is not something that's been extensively researched or extensively studied. One of the projects that I currently have going here at the institution at Penn State is looking at some of the correlations between factors that occur in the perinatal period and subsequent development of food allergy. So hopefully in a few years we might be able to better answer your question as to which species are best, you know, suited for this purpose. I think the ones that have been studied in European countries include the BB12 strain as well as a lactobacillus one or more lactobacilli products, and I would have to get back to you on the details with those. I'm not sure off the top of my head which specific lactobacilli were studied.
Interesting. Bonnie, thank you. Sean in Chicago, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Sean.
Hi, everybody. This kind of relates to the previous caller, but adds one significant factor. I have an 8-year-old son, and he has severe acid reflux and is also lactose intolerant. And the reflux is so bad, like medicines like Prevacid and Acifex have little effect. I'm wondering if there's a probiotic that would benefit him. He does eat soy yogurt quite a bit, and that, you know, is a way to get some of that in, but I don't know how much probiotics is in that kind of thing. Is there a specific probiotic that would be beneficial or anything that relates to acid reflux?
Hmm.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling.
I am a pediatrician. I don't know of anybody who's using or recommending probiotics for treatment of acid reflux. The probiotics, you know, are typically present at the opposite end of the intestinal tract.
Yeah.
They're not present in your stomach, where I can't imagine there would be any benefit to reflux. I don't know.
And I'm not aware of anyone who has actually studied reflux. I'm not aware of any studies or data. I will say that some of the data that was obtained with the BB12 strain at Johns Hopkins was used in infants with colic. And I don't know to what extent there is a relationship between reflux as being a cause of colic. Nonetheless, the study did show a decreased incidence of colic in the children that were supplemented with the probiotic. So, again, I would say to the father, there's no data. Nonetheless, it's probably not going to hurt the son if you wanted to give it a try. And with regard to the lactose intolerant thing, some of the probiotics actually do make lactase, the enzyme that is missing in people who are lactose intolerant. So that explains sometimes why people with lactose intolerance might not be able to drink a glass of milk, but they can eat a cup of yogurt, because the yogurt may have enough lactase in it to actually help the digestion of the lactose. So from that standpoint, probiotics may be beneficial as well.
All right. Thank you, Sean, for calling. Mark in Oshkosh, it's your turn next. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. I'm wondering if there's, perhaps it's far-fetched, but is there any study or of the correlation between the use of pre- or pro-antibiotics and the kind of enzyme problems associated with cystic fibrosis? And I'll listen to my answer off the air.
Wow. Dr. Karpa, did you?
I am not aware of any particular studies with regards to cystic fibrosis and probiotics.
Dr. Greer, you're shaking your head.
It's not coming up in our literature review on the subject committee on nutrition that it's been used or even talked about being used in children with cystic fibrosis.
Okay. So nothing to report there. Mary in Sturgeon Bay, I believe, is next. Mary, hello.
Hello. My question is this. There is a product on the market called Kefir. It's a probiotic, and somebody had mentioned it before but didn't touch on what I want to ask you. I don't have or never have had any digestive problems, but I like the taste of that. And someone recommended taking Kefir or products like that. And is there anything wrong with taking it? I mean, is it going to mix up your digestive system if you drink a glass of that, say, 4 or 5 times a week?
All right. Dr. Karpa?
I don't think there's any risk or harm in drinking kefir. And kefir is a fermented milk product that may contain more bacteria in it than yogurt, standard mm-hmm. yogurt would.
And they call it a probiotic. And so it's okay to drink that once in a while.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Dr. Greer?
I think as long as you're an overall healthy person, they're not going to be harmful. If you're somebody with, say, an immune deficiency or severe debilitation from, you know, a burn or a recent study in the Lancet patients with pancreatitis, they could potentially be harmful. But for the general public who are healthy, I don't think probiotics
any problems
are harmful.
Okay. John in Germantown, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. I developed diverticulosis, and even though it was on my father's side, not my mother's side, but I think I gave it to myself. I did the Atkins thing. But I was too religious on the meat and not enough on the other parts of the fiber. And I was encouraged. I don't do it anymore. I was encouraged to take betaine before I have a meal, to help increase the chyme coming out of the stomach into the gut, and also to take like an acidophilus caplet, one of the refrigerator ones, before I go to bed at night. Is that effectual in helping to keep things in check as far as the diverticulosis? I don't have it bad. I'm just curious.
Diverticulosis is not a pediatric disease, so I'll defer on that.
Dr. Garba?
Diverticulitis involves outpouchings of the colon in which bacterial populations can overgrow. So if that is, in fact, occurring, there is a potential that probiotics could help to reestablish the correct ecology of bacteria in those pockets. I'm not aware, so theoretically it could be helpful. I'm not aware of any studies that have looked at that.
All right. And how about Betsy and Madison? What's on your mind?
Hi. I have a daughter who has, for the last couple of years, experienced a quick feeling of sensation, fullness after she eats, where after a meal she'll just say, oh, I just feel like I ate too much. And it happened very regularly. And in addition, she has constipation issues. And we've done Glycolax and all sorts of things. She eats a high-fiber diet. She exercises, where we eat a lot of whole grains in our family. And it just made me kind of wonder if perhaps there's a slow motility issue. And I'm so sorry that I've missed some other calls, and perhaps this has already been addressed. But if not, could you give me any suggestions?
All right. Probably both of our people could chime. Dr. Karpa, we'll start with you.
Okay. Betsy, I'm wondering if your daughter's been diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome. That is sort of an umbrella term that's used to encompass both patients with constipation-predominant feelings as well as diarrhea-predominant feelings. And the constipation certainly can involve slow motility issues, where probiotics, particularly those species that produce butyric acid, may help to boost the peristalsis of the intestinal tract. And there are studies in the literature that, in fact, I believe there's at least 12 different studies that have looked at IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, mm-hmm. and shown benefits mm-hmm. when probiotics were added. And I have also been involved with treating some patients that had either diarrhea predominant IBS as well as constipation.
Okay.
Predominant IBS. So if that is sort of the diagnosis that is ultimately given to your daughter, then I would say that, yes, perhaps probiotics might be beneficial.
And is it butyric acid? Is that how you're pronouncing that?
Correct.
Okay. And so I could just go to we have a community pharmacy in town and ask about that and
I would ask about probiotics.
Okay.
They're more likely to be to recognize that phrase or that term than they will,
the butyric acid.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see, who's next? Melanie, I believe, is next in Green Bay. Melanie, hello to you.
Hi. Earlier I heard you mention something about acne. I don't know if that was just in relevance to something else or not, but I'm kind of curious if there's something out there for that, or at least to cleanse kind of the toxins out of your system or something, and I will take my answer off the air.
All right. Let's see. Dr. Karpa, what do you think?
I think the only reason that the word acne was even mentioned was because one of the earlier patients, Christina, mentioned that she takes doxycycline, and I was just throwing out some ideas as to why, I didn't know why she was taking doxycycline, but I mentioned that, it's used for acne, it's also used for serious infections, and I was not recommending that she stop taking the doxycycline. So I don't know of any benefits of probiotics for treatment of acne, and I think that's probably where Melanie heard.
That's probably where it came through. Okay. And Dr. Greer says no as well. Dave in Wisconsin Rapids, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. I appreciate the opportunity. Our grandson, who is 21 years old, has been dealing with H. pylori for over a year now, and he's been through the treatment twice. He's allergic to amoxicillin, and so he's treated it with tetracycline. And he still is is suffering from the problem. They did the test. They didn't do the breath test. They did the blood test, and he still tests positive for it, and is still suffering from some of the symptoms. And he is taking a medication. The name escapes me right now, but it has to do with controlling stomach acid. And I'm wondering if there's any kind of a treatment for this particular upsets, digestive tract upset bacterial that would
help him
might
out.
Possibly do the job.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. Dr. Karpa?
Well, I think the studies using probiotics for H. pylori haven't been so much looking at whether the probiotics can eradicate H. pylori as to whether or not the probiotics can prevent diarrhea that's associated with all the antibiotics that they use to treat H. pylori. So from an eradicating H. pylori standpoint, I would not necessarily suspect that probiotics will be beneficial. From treating the side effects associated with taking the medication to eradicate H. pylori, then, you know, yes, probiotics could help with that. I think it would be important, Dave mentioned that his grandson is allergic to amoxicillin. There are several other regimens. Generally, just so your listeners understand, the treatment of H. pylori usually involves about three different antibiotics combined with an acid-suppressive drug. And the acid-suppressing drug just really gets rid of the symptoms for patients, whereas the antibiotics get rid of the problem. And so it would be important to make sure that Dave's grandson is getting an appropriate antibiotic regimen that still contains, you know, three antibiotics that are known to eradicate the H. pylori.
Well, good points. And Dave, thank you very much for calling. Dr. Greer, you're the American Academy of Pediatrics Committee on Nutrition is going to be coming out with a position statement. When will that happen, do you think?
Oh, it'll probably be a year from now before it finally comes out.
About a year. And Dr. Karpa, your book, though, is out right now for those who want to read it. And again, the title, what's the title again?
It is Bacteria for Breakfast, Probiotics for Good Health.
And you can just go on to Amazon or go to your local bookstore and have it ordered. It's published. Who publishes it?
The publisher is Trafford.
Trafford. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a real pleasure to have you both with us. Thank you so much for being here, and we may have to talk about it again. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Larry.
Thanks, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Dr. Frank Gifford, pediatrician, professor in the School of Medicine and Public Health at UW-Madison on the American Academy of Pediatrics Committee on Nutrition, developing a position statement for pediatricians regarding probiotics and prebiotics. Dr. Kelly Karpa of Hershey, Pennsylvania, registered pharmacist, assistant professor in the Department of Pharmacology, and teaches with the Graduate School of Nursing at Penn State University College of Medicine. And again, her book is titled Bacteria for Breakfast, Probiotics for Good Health. A pleasure to have them with us today. Coming up, we'll be taking a look at preventing and treating skin cancer or carcinomas. Dr. Dick Niles, our guest, coming up next here on the Ideas Network.